to.
Which then we took our cart and had to walk about, I think, about 30 kilometers thereabouts. And I also do remember we did that at night. There were continued bullets and a lot of artillery going. And I remember Mr. Novatsky telling me, keep your head down, because in case we get hit. So I was on that cart with all the luggage, and we couldn't walk that far, and we were walking. Eventually got to Georgia's castle, and to her cousin, and stayed there for a while. I didn't like the place, it was crowded, there were lots and lots of people from different parts of Warsaw there. Arrived, there was nowhere to move. I was terribly spoiled and I had made a dreadful fuss. I wasn't going to live there, I wasn't comfortable to meet people. And I wanted to go somewhere else, unfortunately there was nowhere to go. So eventually I reconciled myself with terrible conditions. We had obviously much less food. It was difficult. Mr. Novatsky, Mrs. Novatsky then, after she was doing the sewing and sewing her little 90s or whatever she made out of this parachute, so we could have a little food for that. And we stayed until January 1945, 7th of January, where Russians came in. There was a battle, slowly battle in the villages. We went out to greet the Russians as our liberators. There were dead bodies around a bit. Went to church and I saw the first time I saw really so close up the dead body of a man, and I got very upset because I think we actually knew him or something. And that was the end of the war. So we went back to Warsaw. We also walked there because I don't think there was any transport available, but the place was completely bombed and looted. There was nothing left in our flat, and it was destroyed by them, semi-destroyed. So then decided to go and live in the country with Poznan, and Mr. Vatsky had a brother, a farmer.
Poznan,
yes. And we went to a little town called Stankovic Piątkowski, if you're difficult to spell. So there was a village, and the village in the town was called Shroda. It's like a Wednesday. And one of us, as I said, near Poznan. And we, whether we bought or something, or we were given a little farm with one cow, and we stayed in the farm, and we ran. So it's a small holding. I remember when Miss Walensky was growing vegetables, she was a town woman, she hated it, and I had no choice. And I was looking after, eventually we had two cows, I was looking after the cows. And every other day I went to school for 3 hours. And there were children at school at the time who were 14 who could not read, write, anything. And I do remember helping them to read and write, because obviously you're very young, you learn very quickly. And I was in the middle of the country, and they couldn't grasp numbers, and I was helping the teacher. But I could only go the other day because there were no enough classrooms, not enough teachers. So it was very, very hard those days. And we stayed there till Easter 1946.
Till Easter 1947?
Yeah, 46.
The woman seems to have been very resourceful.
Yes.
Right through the war, you know, you've first of all buying stuff at Krakow and selling it and making things. She sounds a very resourceful lady. Did you become very close to them? It sounds from what you've been saying how, you know, what a happy life you had with them.
Yes, I was very close to them. She disciplined me in a sense that she brought me up, because she would allow me to walk all over him, and she had to put a stop to it. And she taught me what was right, what was wrong. For him, everything I did was right, even if it was wrong. So they're balancing each other up. And it was a very, very happy time for me.
The Warsaw Uprising and that aftermath, was that very traumatic for you? You know, the actual uprising itself, you know, you've been describing how your building was bombed and your little friend killed. Were you sort of aware of what was going on, that the Poles were rising up against the Germans? Did you have any understanding?
I had some understanding, because children understood everything. It was war, always fighting, always uprising, always terrified, everything was burning. The atmosphere of the war was there all the time, even before that, but particularly during the uprising. And the whole Warsaw was burning. I mean, you could see the smoke, you could see the flames right through. And it was a terrifying experience, and everybody talked about it as nothing else. Everybody losing their homes and their belongings, and they were just leaving. So, leaving a burning city.
Mm-hmm. And that return afterwards, you were saying was it totally destroyed, the area you went through?
It wasn't totally destroyed. The building actually stood, but it was not inhabitable. It had to be completely refurbished because the windows were broken. And there was no part of the staircase was damaged. It was unsafe to live there. You couldn't. So everybody decided to go on home until it was being rebuilt. It had been a year later. Mm. They eventually moved into it.
When the Russians came, you know, and liberated you, what was the sort of feeling towards the Russian? Did you pick up any sort of...
Very positive. They were considered liberators from these horrible Germans who ill-treated Poland. And though they were given flowers, though they had a fantastic welcome.
And did they behave? You know, were they behaving in a friendly way towards the Poles, so far as you could see?
As far as I could see, yes. What went on afterwards, I don't know. I heard the stories subsequently, but what I could see, it was very friendly, just waving and people waving to them back. Very friendly.
So in 1946, had you heard anything of your father at this time, or what had happened to other members of your sort of extended family?
Excuse me. No, I haven't. But what happened in Easter 1946? I was coming back from church with my foster mother, Mrs. Lubatsky, and as we approached the farm, Mr. Lubatsky came out and said, "There's a man and a woman here who claim to be Barbara's father." By the way, my name Barbara was given to me by them because they found me in December, 4th of December, which is Santa Barbara, which was patron saint of mine. So that's why they gave me the name Barbara, and also sounded very Polish. Anyway, that's what he said, that it's someone claiming to be her father. And so Mrs. Malatsky, I remember saying, rejected it at hand. "Oh, rubbish, I can't believe it." Anyway, she went on. We went on to meet him and another lady. And she had a chat with him, which I didn't hear because I was told to stand back. She came to me and said, "This man, his name is Marek, and claims to be your father." And she told me later, and she guessed straight away he was my father, because I looked like him. I do look like my father. So she asked him for various details, and he had a photograph of me and him and other things. and after long discussion they had to accept that I was his daughter and he was my father. So we went in and had a meal in the farm, and I was told to sit next to him and learn to chat to him. Of course, I was a strange man. I didn't feel like chatting to him. I didn't know that I was in tears. I want to cling on to her. And I then stayed the night with us, and I was told the next morning he has to take me away. I was after terrible tears, but they said she'd come with me. And so they ordered a taxi, they ordered it before I think to come to, the car came to pick us up. And I got into it with him and this lady, who subsequently was became his wife. I went to Mrs. Novatsky and me, and the thing I remember very vividly is Mr. Novatsky standing there saying goodbye to us when we left, and tears coming down his cheeks. It was absolutely terrible. He was totally devastated. His suffering was on his face so much I burst into tears, and he and then he cried, and while we were driving off I kept turning around and he was just standing in a terrible state. He wasn't the man to show his feelings, but he just let me rot. So then we went back to Warsaw, or we went by plane, and we kept on getting by plane 1946. A military plane was used for, which was all in the transport. Went to Warsaw. And stay a few days in Warsaw with her, and then she had to go back because she had to go back to the farm. And I was left with this lady and my father. Then again, I had to call her mother again, so it's my third mother. My father sort of left me in charge of her, really.
How did you relate to your father? You know, when you knew it was your father, did it mean a great deal to you? What was your sort of feelings towards him?
Very hard to describe. I knew he was my father. I vaguely recognised him. When I looked at him, first time when I thought, it was a glimpse of something very familiar. And I did realise he was my father. But I had no feelings for him because it was long ago I saw him. And I was very upset to leave the family. So my feelings were more negative than positive.
Excuse me.
Nevertheless, a lot of children came back to their proper parents and after the war, I was told that, and I accepted it. But it wasn't a happy time for me. I wanted to go back to the other people.
And I suppose you would have been 8 then, wouldn't you, 1946?
Yes,
8 years old, yes, just starting school.
Yeah, I started school before, that's right.
How about the your stepmother-to-be, you know, were they married at that time?
I'm not sure if they had been married in Germany, they met in Germany, or they married in Poland subsequently, because it was only a civil marriage and it was very low-key, there was like, don't know anything about it. I know she had a different name at the time, and then afterwards she changed her name, so I suspect she wasn't married then.
Yes, how did she sort of behave towards you?
She's a very nice person, not very warm, but very correct in everything she does. And she was kind. She was very young. She left me again with her friend, who was much older, who she survived the war with, and because what I was going to say, we were in Warsaw for a few days and went to Łódź Lodge, which we stayed with the two friends she survived the war with. Because she didn't look Jewish, she was tall and blonde, but more Swedish, blue-eyed. She managed to survive and go out and as not Jewish, and she was taken to a camp, but as a Polish worker, to German work camp, and then she met my father. I was then looked after by the two sisters, especially the older one, who I got quite attached to. She was much older, and my stepmother left me really in charge of her, because she was only in her 20s at the time. She was about 26, 27. And it was hard for her, I see now, to be in charge of a very difficult little girl who didn't want to be where she was. And she had no experience. And my father wasn't that interested.
So is that the impression you had?
Yes.
That he wasn't interested in you?
He didn't really have much contact with me.
Did you not talk? Did he ask you about the war and what had happened to you?
No. I don't remember if I asked him anything. I never talked to him about it. He just never did. So, and then life went on from then on. I was with them until when they got married. And I said, we moved to Gdynia, which is New Dansk. And we lived there for 3 years. We went to school in Hungary. She was nice. She went to school for the open days and different things. And we had a married in 47. We actually now live in England. I brought her over and she got married to us. And I've known her now since 1947. She lives in Letchworth now. And I got reasonably close to her because she picked me up from school and she sort of seemed to have more contact with me than my stepmother did. My father was working for an American firm. He could not work in medicine, so he didn't want to. It obviously had an effect on his concentration camps because he went to a few and had a very hard time. And so he worked in the American firm. He had a car, the chauffeur driven car, and was picked up by a chauffeur. I hated it. He smelled it really well. I was embarrassed. I was to hide. And life went on. Then 1949, we moved back to Warsaw and he went back to medicine. And just went, life went on. I went to school. But I didn't have a good time. My stepmother and my father were affectionate, you know. I did not have a happy childhood at all. I just didn't have a childhood. Every 2 weeks, I used to go to the other people. They moved back to Warsaw. My father helped them out. And the man got a job, I said, Mike Porter, the company my father worked with originally, this American company, helping the Jews. And it was good because there was a shortage of food in Poland. There was tremendous queues. And every month, apart from Sally, used to get provision food, which was right for him. And so they had a job, and she had a job sewing. And I used to go and visit them every other Sunday, which was great for me. Yeah, great.
And you maintained that old close relationship with them, did you?
I did, to the very end, until I left Poland. I was at university. When I went to America, when I started earning, I used to actually send them part of my salary every month to England. I got married and lived in England. When I could afford it, I did the same.
You, of course, would be living at this time under a communist regime, I think.
That's right, until 1958.
Yes, what was that like? You know, what effect did it have? You know, was it very overt, the sort of communist system?
Yes, very much so. our evidence comes, we're continually brainwashed. Although I went to a private school, which state school at the time, but pre-war was a private school, it was a very good school, and they were the same teachers as before the war, except that the headmistress was Coons. So, there was a shortage of food, but we were very lucky because my father had patients from the country, we were very paid for money, paid in chickens and food, so we were okay. There was very much, there was no anti-Semitism, I never experienced any. I was a very staunch communist, and whenever I said anything to my parents, they never answered anything at all, because they were terrified to say anything as children and then answer them to their parents. So there was never any, wherever I said, it was no reply. I remember when Stalin died, I was in tears. I wouldn't eat for 3 days. I was so upset. And because that's how we were brainwashed. The films, school, the general feeling of rebuilding egalitarian, beautiful Poland. We also helped rebuild Poland. Literally, every other week, the children from schools had to go and remove the rubble from streets, which was a good idea. We had fun, we were giving drinks, and good. So my time in Poland, communist Poland, was a fairly happy time. I went to a very good school, as I said, and I was quite good at school. I did my matriculation with virtually all the A's. My father never ever went to my school for working day, ever. My stepmother did, but I didn't have a close relationship. I had a very good friend, and I tend to go after school. I tend to go home and have my dinner, and go off to her place and do homework with her, and go off with her, and came back at night. In fact, I was accused once that I treated my house like a hotel, which I was. I didn't have anything to say to them, so there was no closeness.
Were you able to sort of ask about the early days of the war and what had happened to your family? Did you ever find out from your father any details of, you know, what happened to your mother and him when the war started and how you came to be hidden with that first family? Were you able to get information about yourself, really, and about your life?
There was absolutely complete wall of silence. There was, you never talked about it, you never asked about it. There was no, I didn't dream of talking to him about it. It was very interesting that my father in his desk had photographs of my mother, my real mother, and me, and various photographs. And what happened when my Genia, our maid, who came to live with us in Warsaw, that's which I was very close to, discovered it somehow, because he must have shown or something. So whenever he was out and he happened to leave the keys at the desk, she used to look out if they're not coming back. I used to open the desk and have a look at these photographs. There was a routine like that. We used to do it quite frequently. Look at these photographs, look at it, and then put them back. And put the keys back in the same place we discovered. And I remember how many times we gained us knowledge. And he said, he left the keys, we can look up. And so that was the only thing I had. I have never said a single word to him about, and asked him about the war. He never talked, he never said anything. He wants me totally to forget that I had another, that I had a mother. He wanted me to accept his present wife as a mother. That was his attitude. But I know it's wrong, but everybody in Poland tried the same. They're trying to forget about the past. It was completely cut off from their mind because they probably couldn't get rid of it. And forget, unfortunately, about their loved ones and start a new life. People remarried as much as they could and started and were busy about the present life, which was pretty hard because it was very little food. And go about their normal daily routine.
Did you feel like that, or did you want to find out? Were you curious about, you know, your earlier life?
Obviously was, because I do not look at these photographs all the time. I want to find out about my mother. And I was, because I was quite unhappy with them, there was even more reason why I wanted to find out, because my imagination was fired. What would it be like if I had a real mother and my life would be warm and happy? Because she was very nice, my stepfather. I have nothing against her, but she was quite cold. She had a son. 1948, one of my half-brothers, who I'm quite close to. She loved him a lot, I mean, he's her life, but she still was even not very warm to him. She's just not that sort of person. She was very concerned about her appearance, her playing bridge, her enjoying life. She had everything she could. She had a maid. She used to go on holidays for 3 months a year, and he used to join, my father used to join him, and I never went. He was left in the year, so.
Yes, it seems from what you've said that, you know, your father was able, and his new wife, they were able to resume what we would think of a sort of middle class standard of living, is that right?
Yes.
Even though Poland was, you know, under the communists, that there were these differences.
Yes.
Were there?
Yes, very much so. It's not so much middle class as such, not an intelligentsia. You had different ideas, you had different interests, you went to concerts, and you had different education. All his friends were doctors. I don't remember anybody else, ever.
Did you have to join the pioneers?
Yes, I did.
Was that, you know, essential to belong?
I think so, but I didn't object to it. It was fun. But of course, in 1956, when they Hungarian Revolution started, because actually it started in Poland by students, and then spread to Hungary, we started it. And it was a rude awakening. What was it like? We were, a number of streets were very dangerous because the police were shooting at us. I was one of the students who had just finished school who took part in the protest. I remember I got posted by my sort of student union to a cemetery where I held the 5th November, held various placards about liberation. And then my Jewishness was very much awake and I became quite Zionistic. And I joined the Jewish club, which was created. We had a meeting, so some building in the basement, table tennis table. And I met a lot of my people in Jewish and became friends, and I wanted to at the time I wanted to be there. I was disillusioned with communists by that time.
It was interesting you saying earlier on, you know, when Stalin died in 1953, how very upset you were. At this time, presumably, you know, this would have been before your awakening in 56. Did the Russians have a very positive image in Poland then for young people?
Very.
And Stalin in particular?
Yes. Positive image, portraits of him that were portrayed as a great hero in films and in theatre and lectures everywhere you could. And I remember being very annoyed with my parents saying, "You don't even cry, you don't care that he died, do you?" Because they did not. They didn't say anything, positive, negative, they were completely quiet.